Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really unearthing something quite fascinating. It cuts right to the heart of how we think about plastic pollution, you know, and environmental policy, too. We're diving into the EU's Single-Use Plastics Directive, specifically 2019-1904. And there's been a recent, well, pretty game-changing clarification. It could redefine what you thought you knew about plastic degradation.
Absolutely.
We're taking all the sources you provided us with and trying to extract the absolute essentials.
And our mission today really is to cut through some of that confusion, peel back the layers, you know, the scientific definitions, the legal ones, and really get to the truth of what's actually happening when these plastics break down.
Right.
We're going to clarify the critical distinction between what gets called oxo-degradable and oxo-biodegradable plastics.
Yep.
It's about moving beyond just the headlines, getting to the core science.
Now, you'd think the rules and definitions would be pretty set in stone, wouldn't you?
You would think so.
But what we're about to explore is a very recent and, frankly, surprising clarification from within the EU itself. And it truly shifts how we might understand these categories. This is where the story gets, well, really interesting for us. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
So let's start with the big picture. The EU Single-Use Plastics Directive, the SUPD, right? It has this one big goal. Slash plastic pollution.
The main goal.
And when it came out, it famously took aim at certain types of plastics, specifically banning those it categorized as oxo-degradable.
Yeah, that's the term they used. But what's truly striking here is that this specific ban, this prohibition, it wasn't even in the original draft.
Really? Not in the first version?
No, not the one the EU Commission proposed. It was actually the Environment Committee. Now, your sources describe them as non-scientific experts.
Okay.
And they amended draft Article 5 to include this ban on oxo-degradable plastic. And here's the kicker. They did this before their own scientific experts, the European Chemicals Agency, ECA, before ECA had even finished their studies on the other type, oxo-biodegradable plastic.
So policy first, science later. That doesn't sound ideal.
Well, it's not just a bureaucratic hiccup, is it? It raises a really important question about how policy can sometimes, you know, get ahead of the science, especially in such a critical environmental area.
That's a huge point. And here's where we see sort of the rubber meet the road. On June 20th, 2025, so very recently, we saw a major development. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, of the Republic of Ireland, a full EU member state, they officially approved D2W products from Symphony Environmental Technologies, PSE.
Okay, that's significant. And the Irish EPA's findings, they were incredibly clear, quite definitive, you said.
Exactly.
They confirmed that these D2W products, they do not contain oxo-degradable materials as defined by the directive.
Right, as defined by the directive, that's key.
And crucially, they explicitly classified D2W technology as oxo-biodegradable. Now, what that means is it involves both oxidation and microbial degradation. So two processes. And these lead to full biodegradation. Importantly, without leaving toxic residues or those persistent microplastics everyone worries about.
You're right.
So they stated pretty unequivocally that D2W products are not subject to the directive's restrictions.
And the plot thickens, doesn't it? Because this isn't just an isolated decision from Ireland, is it?
Apparently not.
We've learned that this official confirmation, it actually aligns perfectly with written advice Symphony got from Joshua Holmes, KC, of Moncton Chambers. He's a specialist in EU law.
Okay, a legal expert weighing in.
Yes, and he independently concluded that oxo-biodegradable plastic falls completely outside the definition of oxo-degradable plastic in Article 3.3.
The directive's definition.
Exactly. And therefore, it's not subject to that Article 5 prohibition, the ban.
Right.
So if this is the case, you know, if these materials are so distinct, how do we begin to shift this broader narrative, the one that just paints all these oxoplastics with the same brush?
That's the challenge, isn't it? Understanding the nuance.
Well, let's maybe turn our attention to the very heart of that original ban, Recital 15 of the directive. It lists five specific reasons for prohibiting that type of plastic. These were the supposed failures of oxo-degradable plastics.
Okay, the justification.
Let's break down each of those reasons point by point. Because what we're seeing from your sources about oxo-biodegradable plastics like D2W, well, it often seems to directly contradict those initial concerns.
Absolutely. Let's take them one by one. First, the directive claimed these plastics do not properly biodegrade.
Okay, properly. What does that even mean?
Well, that's the rub, isn't it? The EU Parliament never actually defined what properly biodegrade means or, you know, what a reasonable timescale for that would be.
Convenient?
Kind of, yeah. But If an oxo-biodegradable plastic is proven to biodegrade in the open environment, according to ASTM D6954,
which is the industry standard.
Exactly. That's the industry's gold standard for how these combined oxidation and biodegradation processes should work. If it meets that standard, then arguably it does properly biodegrade.
So there is a standard, just not one the Parliament used.
Right. And there's evidence, too. For example, the four-year OXOMAR study done at a French marine laboratory. It found congruent results showing that oxo-biodegradable plastics biodegrade in seawater with a significantly higher efficiency than conventional plastic.
Higher efficiency. Okay.
And they noted that the oxidation level driven by the D2W protodegradant catalyst was of crucial importance.
Interesting.
What's even more interesting from the material you've given us is that ordinary plastics and even many bio-based plastics often don't properly biodegrade in the open environment either, yet they aren't banned.
That is a significant double standard right there. Okay, so what about the second reason? The claim that these plastics contribute to microplastic pollution.
Yes, microplastics. It's a huge concern, obviously. But let's be clear. Conventional plastics, when they're exposed to sunlight, they fragment, and they are the principal source of microplastic pollution in the environment.
The main source.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
again, they aren't banned. The key distinction here for oxo-biodegradable plastics like D2W is that they convert not into persistent fragments of plastic.
Not into microplastics.
No. They convert into waxy substances, which are then fully biodegradable by microorganisms.
Okay, a different pathway.
A completely different end result. And in fact, ECHA's own stance back on October 30th, 2018, was that they were not convinced that oxo-biodegradable plastic creates microplastics.
ECHA itself wasn't convinced.
Their words. And even earlier, August 2018, ECHA advised the EU Commission that microplastics, by definition almost, do not biodegrade.
So if it biodegrades.
Exactly. If something biodegrades, like the waxy substance from oxo-biodegradable plastic, it doesn't fit ECHA's own definition of a microplastic. There's a certain internal consistency there in ECHA's logic.
That's quite a contradiction with the ban's rationale, isn't it? If the very agency advising the EU wasn't convinced, it really makes you wonder about the basis for that part of the ban.
It does raise questions.
Let's move to reason number three. It's not compostable.
Okay, compostability. Again, let's look at conventional plastics. They aren't compostable, but they remain unbanned.
See a pattern here?
Mm-hmm. For D2W, though, oxo-biodegradable plastics have actually been independently tested, according to ISO 1155 and also in real-world industrial composting facilities. And they were found to be compostable.
So they are compostable based on tests.
Yes. But more fundamentally, we've seen from your sources that no reason was ever given by the European Parliament why compostability should even be relevant to a ban focused on, say, marine pollution.
That's a good point. Why is compostability the benchmark here?
Exactly. Plastics don't actually become compost, you know, like food waste does. They convert into CO2 gas during the composting process.
Right.
They don't really have a useful role in the final compost product itself.
Interesting. Okay. And what about the recycling stream? Reason four claimed these plastics negatively affect the recycling of conventional plastic.
This one's important, too, because it's actually well known, pretty widely accepted, that bio-based compostable plastics will contaminate a conventional plastic recycling stream.
Right, the PLA plastics and so on.
Exactly. Yet those are not banned. By contrast, oxo-biodegradable plastic, the D2W type, has been safely recycled along with conventional plastics for many years.
Safely recycled. There's proof of that.
Yes, including by the largest bread manufacturer in the Western world, apparently. And its recyclability is further confirmed by reports from three independent expert test houses. The evidence just doesn't seem to support the claim that it's a contaminant for recycling.
So, okay, we have these four points. Doesn't properly biodegrade, contributes to microplastics, not compostable, negative for recycling. All seem to be, well, at best, inconsistently applied across different plastic types, or at worst, outright contradicted by the scientific evidence for oxo-biodegradable plastics like D2W.
That seems to be what the sources suggest.
Which brings us to the fifth and final reason cited for the ban. Fails to deliver a proven environmental benefit.
Right. And the counterargument from your sources is pretty straightforward. If an oxo-biodegradable plastic is tested and shown to biodegrade in the open environment without leaving microplastics,
as the studies suggest,
as studies like OXOMAR and others suggest, and thereby demonstrably reduces the overall burden of plastic pollution that would otherwise persist, well, then it absolutely delivers an obvious environmental benefit, doesn't it?
Logically, yes.
So the prohibition, arguably, shouldn't apply to a type of plastic that doesn't actually fall within the genuine reasons given for the ban. It just seems like a logical conclusion based on the evidence presented.
This really does raise a critical question, though. If the scientific evidence and the practical applications we've just discussed seem to contradict the very reasons given for the ban in Recital 15, where does all this confusion actually originate?
Yeah, how did we get here?
Your sources point directly to the definition of oxo-degradable itself. That definition within the directive seems to be a major source of deep contention.
That's precisely where the core of the problem seems to lie. Scientifically, if you look at the EU standards experts, CEN.
Okay, the standards body.
Yes. They define oxo-degradation in their technical report, TR15351, and their definition is degradation resulting from oxidative cleavage of macromolecules.
Sounds technical. What does that mean in practice?
It describes plastics that break down through oxidation in the open environment, but they just create microplastics. They don't really become biodegradable except over a very, very, very long time. That's the classic understanding of purely oxo-degradable.
Okay, so fragmentation without real biodegradation.
Essentially, yes. But here's the kicker. Instead of using this precise, scientifically accepted definition, the EU Parliamentary Committee, as your materials explain it, they basically invented their own definition in Article 3.3 of the SUP Directive.
They just made one up?
It appears so. This definition states oxo-degradable plastic is, and I'm quoting loosely here, plastic materials that include additives which, through oxidation, lead to the fragmentation of the plastic material into microfragments, or R2, to chemical decomposition.
So it's almost like the EU took a dictionary, saw a word, and just decided, nope, we'll make up our own definition for this law, completely separate from how scientists actually use the term.
That seems to be the argument presented in your sources, yes.
What are the consequences of that kind of legislative inventiveness?
Well, your sources argue that this definition in Article 3.3, it bears very little relation to those detailed reasons for the ban we just discussed in Recital 15. It only focuses on chemical decomposition and microfragments.
Right, not the biodegradation or recycling aspects, really.
Not explicitly. And the impact could be far broader than perhaps intended. It's well known that many conventional plastics already contain additives, like colorants, for example, which cause them to oxidize and fragment to microplastics over time.
Sure. Happens all the time.
And your sources point out that the definition in Article 3.3 doesn't specify that the additives must have been deliberately added for the purpose of causing oxidation.
Ah, okay. So intent doesn't matter in the definition.
Not according to the wording. So if you applied it strictly, that definition could inadvertently capture a vast range of conventional plastics that are currently on the market and not intended to be banned.
Wow, that could be huge.
Potentially. Now, contrast that with the case of oxo-biodegradable plastic like D2W. The evidence provided, both from Symphony's own scientists and from Professor Jakubowicz, who's described as one of the world's leading polymer scientists.
Okay.
Their evidence shows that the degradation is caused by a reduction in the molecular weight of the polymer. The long chains get shorter. And critically, this is not chemical decomposition as implied in the directive's definition.
Oh, it's a different chemical process.
It's a different process leading to a biodegradable material, not just fragments or chemical breakdown in that sense. It's more like a controlled, engineered breakdown, getting it ready for the microbes.
Right, setting the table for biodegradation.
Exactly. And Symphony also got further scientific verification from Jordy Labs, a specialist lab in the U.S. with like 40 years experience in polymers.
Okay, another expert opinion.
Yes. And they confirmed two key things. A, oxidation would happen eventually anyway, even without the D2W master batch. The additive just controls the rate of oxidation, makes it predictable.
Right.
And B, crucially, that this oxidation does not result in chemical decomposition in the way Article 3.3 seems to imply.
Yeah.
What's really fascinating here is the sheer precision of the scientific analysis, you know, the level of detail that goes into making these quite nuanced distinctions between different material behaviors.
So after digging through all these details, what's the big takeaway for you, our listener?
Mm.
It really seems to boil down to this. Not all plastics are created equal, especially when it comes to how they break down or don't break down in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly a far more nuanced story than the headlines or even the directive itself sometimes often suggest.
Absolutely. Based on all the evidence we've explored today from your sources, and including that very recent official confirmation from the Republic of Ireland's EPA, it seems clear that D2W biodegradable plastic falls outside the definitions and the prohibitions that are contained in Recital 15 and Articles 5 and 3.3 of the Single-Use Plastics Directive 2019-904.
So therefore?
Therefore, it is not prohibited in the EU, according to this interpretation and the evidence presented.
Understanding these intricate scientific distinctions, these legal definitions, it's truly crucial, isn't it, for anyone trying to navigate this complex world of environmental policy and material science?
It really is.
It just shows how critical it is to look beyond the broad statements, the simple labels, and truly unpack the specific details and definitions. Because sometimes, as we've seen, what's supposedly banned isn't quite what you think it is, based on the headline.
Exactly. And given the ongoing massive global challenge of plastic pollution and the rigorous scientific scrutiny that is being applied to new material technologies, perhaps a final thought to leave you with is this. What further questions might this deep dive raise for you about how environmental regulations are actually crafted and applied? And maybe, how should we as a society ensure that our policies keep pace with evolving scientific understanding, rather than perhaps sometimes getting ahead of it or using definitions that don't quite match the science?